Have you been wandering through life with no purpose? Are you looking for a catalyst to change your life for the better? These Servant Leadership podcasts will change your perspective of yourself, others, and your creator. This transformational leadership approach uses seven simple tools to help you understand your purpose in life. Please join Dave Kuhnert and Chris Seegers for today's podcast.
This is Servant Leadership podcast number 16, Communication. Part two. In our last episode, we said that communication is the thread that weaves all of these tools together. We started with the structure of their here path, and we have to understand that we have to have clarity of the there, and clarity is going to come through communication. So if I want to have people unified, to have a shared vision, to get to that there, I have to communicate, and I have to communicate effectively. I want them to understand my desired intent to get to the end state, the there. And then we have to communicate the current reality. We want to share our current reality transparently, supported by facts. So we have to communicate that. And whenever we're sharing current reality or doing a moment of truth or talking about emotions, we have to be very careful of how we choose our words, because our words matter. So we started last episode with the idea that there's a communications model, that there's a sender and a receiver. There's barriers to communication, and there's a medium that we have to transmit through. And we said that the sender has to understand the medium, the limitations, the capabilities of the medium he's going to transmit through, and the barriers to communication, like gender, position, physical size, age, experience, things like that. So the sender's got to take into account all of these items, have clarity within himself, system 1, 2, and 3, mind, body, spirit, of what I'm trying to transmit, what I'm going to encode, then transmit that message through the medium so that the receiver can understand it. So I can't say it to make myself look smart. I've got to say it in a manner that they're going to get it. Then the receiver's job is to take that message and decode it and listen. And we said listening's really hard. We talked a lot about that last time, about how difficult it can be to really listen. And that's because listening requires humility. We have to lay ourselves aside. We have to focus on someone who's not ourselves. We have to focus on somebody who's sending the message and do that observational listening thing, where we're making that movie in our mind as we listen to them to try to picture what they're actually saying. We're not thinking about what am I going to say next. We're thinking about what they're saying and painting the mental picture, that mental image of having that clarity of what that looks like by asking clarifying questions. So we have to be curious as well. And if we'll do those three things, humility, external focus, and asking questions, or clarity of questions, curiosity. So humility, setting myself aside, external focus, observational listening, and being curious, asking questions, it equals listening. We actually are hearing what they're saying. And really, what we're doing when we do that is we're putting ourselves in their shoes. We're seeing things through their lens. We are seeing their perspective. And that is really what love is. We're loving them when we listen. So today we're going to continue on with this idea of now the receiver is going to ask questions or is going to become the sender. So this is that feedback that we talked about. And we even said that the best feedback comes through actions. So it's the idea of not just being hearers of the word, but doers of the word. We saw that in James, what we read about last time. James said, yeah, if you hear all this stuff and you consider yourself religious, that's great, that's awesome, that's good. But if you don't go out and do it, it's for nothing. It doesn't make any sense. So actions speak louder than words. We want to demonstrate that we understand through our actions. So if you had, for instance, maybe it was with your child or with an employee, you sat down, did a moment of truth, and then came up with your plan of action. So we did the whole moment of truth where we started off with step one, which is getting them to acknowledge reality, yes or no questions. Then we went into getting the story of how it got that way, and we listened, right? We asked clarifying questions, painted that picture in our mind, and then we helped them come up with a plan. And now it's time for feedback. So we follow up on the plan. And when we find out that they either did or they didn't do it, did they really listen to what the plan was? Did they execute what we asked them to execute? And if they did, that means they were listening. If they didn't, it was either I can and I won't. They listened, they knew the standard, it was very clear, and they didn't execute it, or they didn't really have clarity of what you were asking them to do in the plan. So we want to make sure that this feedback, and we understand that our actions tell us whether we really listened or not.
Can we tie that back to our little round top example that we've used kind of throughout this podcast?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So when you think back, remember on Little Round Top, when Chamberlain and his regiment were on top of Little Round Top before the third charge that was gathering down the hill by the Confederates, he brought his company commanders together. How he explained what he wanted done is he used an analogy that they all understood. He told them to have the flanking element swing like a barn door as they came down the hill so they would all be on line together to press into the enemy, to attack the enemy. So he told them to fix bayonets, and as we come down the hill, I want you to swing like a barn door. They all understood how a barn door swings. There was no doubt. He didn't say in some strategic level military language, this is what I want you to do. I want you to do a bold flanking maneuver to create inflated fire where nobody understood what he was talking about. No, what he said is swing like a barn door. He didn't say something that would make him look smart and using some term that his company commanders wouldn't understand. He said it in a manner that they could all understand. In fact, Abraham Lincoln was known for his communication ability, and he said, "They say I tell a great many stories. I reckon I do. But I have learned from long experience that plain people, take them as they run, are more easily influenced through the medium of broad and humorous illustrations than in any other way." So Lincoln, who is known as the great communicator because he understood this communication model so well, he listened well, taught lessons through stories and parables, used many analogies, and asked a lot of questions. He left us with this great example to follow. Lincoln himself took these lessons from Scripture. We saw this through the example of Jesus. Lincoln understood that when trying to communicate, it's about getting the message through the barriers and getting the feedback to know if it was understood or not understood. He took Jesus' example. You look through all the Gospels and you see so many parables and how Jesus taught lessons through communication. Lincoln did this as well. That's where he got it from. Humorous illustrations, parables, and got his point across. If you've ever read Lincoln on Leadership or anything about Lincoln, you can imagine Lincoln in his cabinet deep into the night arguing over where they were going to attack the Confederates next. And on, everybody's voices are raised, and Lincoln's kind of sitting off to the side by himself. And then he would say something off the wall like, "There was an old man once walking down the railroad tracks." And everybody would stop. The emotions would simmer down. They would have a chance to collect themselves because this crazy old guy is making some off-the-wall statement about an old man on the train tracks. But then he would go on and tell the story about the old man in a manner in which all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute, I'm the old man on the tracks, and I'm about to get hit by the train. So he'd do these parables and these stories where they could all understand it in the end, but it caused the emotions to slow down. He understood the communication model, and he understood that emotions are responders, and when things get heated, emotions are untrustworthy. I've got to slow down their emotions. So if I'll tell a story, people will stop and listen to what I'm saying and quit focusing on their own lack of humility, their own ego, and start focusing on the story. And he'd get this point across to them in a manner in which they could digest it and not lose any face.
Yeah, it's funny on the storytelling. When I got out of grad school, I can't remember what book it was, but it really accentuated, hey, tell stories, whether it be selling, you know, if you're selling or if you're job interviewing or whatever. And so the first interview I had out of grad school for a position, I had that on my mind. Everybody says, oh, I'm a hard worker, I'm ethical, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And the guy that was interviewing me said, well, you've told us a lot about you'll work harder than anybody else. Why or how? And so I told him a story about building fence in New Mexico where we built 2 miles of fence and we lived in tents and, you know, there was no amenities. And then when I got out of the interview, I was like, that was probably the dumbest thing I could have said. And when they called back and they offered me the job, he said, there was a lot of great candidates that were actually more qualified than you, but that story spoke to your character, and not many people can say, like, oh, you know, let's point to this. So storytelling is incredibly powerful.
Much more powerful than that 10-page resume with the 8x10 glossy cover photo of yourself.
That's right.
Well, we think about Lincoln and his parables. I mean, he was just following what Scripture showed us. I mean, what Jesus taught us. And it's difficult. I have a few stories that I keep in my revolver to shoot every now and then, but I don't have a lot of them. And he was just really good at it. He understood that effective communication is not about the sender trying to make himself look smart. It's not about how complex of a sentence structure I can create to make sure that everyone knows I'm smart. Lincoln knew that communication is not about serving me. It's about serving the person you're trying to communicate with. So let's look at some examples here of when it's the most difficult for us. We'll say that the communication model is being used by two people who are very different, two people who always struggle to communicate and never really know why. The two people we're going to use even communicate through the easiest medium to transmit through, face-to-face communication. However, they have the most difficult barrier to communication to contend with, their husband and wife. Gender seems to be the most difficult of the barriers for us to overcome. And obviously there's significant differences between how men and women process information and communicate. Women express themselves with words, and men do not. Research shows that women speak between 20 and 33,000 words per day, as compared to men who speak a paltry 7,000 words per day. And you can see this, right, with small children. So you can describe it best by watching small children play. Watch a little girl play, and she spends all of her time expressing herself through words. If you just watch her play, she's going to have two little dolls, and you quickly notice that all of the dolls have a name. They're all about to get married. They all have kids and a career, and all have very long conversations with each other that don't add up to much at all. It's just constant, the na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, and na-na-na all day long. It's all words, and that's how she's going to express herself. Now, conversely, watch a little boy play, and he's going to have his two cars and a dump truck, right? And you won't hear a single word out of him all day long. All you're going to hear is vroom, vroom, and the screech that the tires make as the car accelerates. But not much expressed in words at all comes out of a little boy. This same trait is going to hold true for us as we get older. So we want to make sure we understand that. Women communicate and express themselves through words. Men do not. Men express themselves through action, generally. So as we age, women are going to continue to express themselves that way, and men are not. Women will talk through the entire gamut of things that happen in a day. Men prefer not to express themselves through words. When asked about her day, she'll spend the next 10 to 15 minutes describing it in what some might consider painstaking detail. Conversely, when asked about his day, he'll say, "It was fine." And that's it. That's all you're going to get. "How was your day?" "Fine." This can cause some problems with our relationships. She may feel he doesn't want to open up to her. And he may feel that when she's saying all this stuff, she must need me to fix something. Men tend to feel that if there's something so important to say that it requires this many words, it must require an action on my part. "You must need me to fix something for you." Of course, that's rarely the case. She's just expressing herself and ultimately just wants him to listen.
And how many times do we hear that from our wife? "I had this issue at work," and blah, blah. And you're like, "Well, just do this." And they're like, "Just listen. I don't need you to fix it." I mean, they'll verbalize that to you. "I don't need you to fix this problem, right? I can fix it on my own. I just wanted to tell you this."
There's a video out. If you go to YouTube, you can see it. It's called Nail in the Head, where the happy couple is sitting there and she's got a nail in her forehead. And she's trying to describe that she's got a problem. She's saying, "I've got this aching feeling in my forehead." And he's like, "Well, you know, you got a nail in your head." And she's like, "Quit trying to fix it. It's not about the nail." And this goes on and on and on. And then finally, she said, "All I want you to do is listen." He says, "Fine, I'm listening." So she goes on to explain that all her sweaters are snagged. I mean, all of them, right? The nail catches all of them. And finally, he says, "Well, that must be so hard." And she says, "It is, thank you." They lean in to kiss, and he bumps the nail in her head. And he's like, "Would you just stop?" Well, it's not about the nail. And what the video is trying to portray to us is, it's not about the nail. For her, she just wants him to listen. And for him, he wants to fix her problems.
And it goes back to that humility, having humility with your wife to just say, look, I'm here for you. I'm here to be a selfless servant. I'm not here to fix your problems.
If you recall Dave Barry, he was a columnist. He wrote an article in the paper called She Drives for Relationship, He's Lost in Transmission. So I'm going to read this. And again, this is a Dave Barry article. It says, let's say a guy named Roger is attracted to a woman named Elaine. He asks her out to a movie. She accepts. They have a pretty good time. A few nights later, he asks her out to dinner. And again, they enjoy themselves. They continue to see each other regularly. And after a while, neither one of them is seeing anybody else. And then one evening, when they're driving home, a thought occurs to Elaine. And without really thinking, she says it aloud. Do you realize that as of tonight, we've been seeing each other for exactly 6 months? And there's a silence in the car. To Elaine, it seems like a very loud silence. She thinks to herself, geez, I wonder if it bothers him that I said that. Maybe he's been feeling confined by a relationship. Maybe he thinks I'm trying to push him into some kind of obligation that he doesn't want or isn't sure of. And Roger's thinking, gosh, 6 months? And Elaine is thinking, but hey, I'm not sure I want this kind of relationship either. Sometimes I wish I had a little more space so I'd have time to think about whether I really want us to keep going the way we are, moving steadily toward, I mean, where are we going? Are we just going to keep seeing each other at this level of intimacy? Are we heading toward marriage, toward children, toward a lifetime together? Am I ready for that level of commitment? Do I really even know this person? And Roger's thinking, so that means it was, let's see, February when we started going out, which was right after I had the car at the dealer's, which means, let me check the odometer. Whoa, I'm way overdue for an oil change here. And Elena's thinking, he's upset. I can see it on his face. Maybe I'm reading this completely wrong. Maybe he wants more from our relationship, more intimacy, more commitment. Maybe he sensed, even before I sensed it, that I was feeling some reservations. Yes, I bet that's it. That's why he's so reluctant to say anything about his own feelings. He's afraid of being rejected. And Roger's thinking, and I'm going to have them look at that transmission again. I don't care what those morons say. It's still not shifting, right? And they better not try to blame it on the cold weather this time. What cold weather? It's 87 degrees out, and this thing is shifting like a garbage truck. And I paid those incompetent thieves $600. And Elaine's thinking, he's angry. And I don't blame him. I'd be angry too. God, I feel so guilty putting him through this, but I can't help the way I feel. I'm just not sure. And Roger's thinking, they'll probably say it's only a 90-day warranty. That's exactly what they're going to say, the scumballs. And Elaine is thinking, maybe I'm too idealistic, waiting for a knight to come riding in on his white horse when I'm sitting right next to a perfectly good man, a person I enjoy being with, a person I truly do care about, a person who seems to truly care about me, a person who's in pain because of my schoolgirl romantic fantasy. And Roger's thinking, warranty? They want a warranty? I'll give them a warranty. I'll take their warranty and stick it right up there. Roger, Elaine says aloud. What? Roger says, startled. Please don't torture yourself like this, she says, her eyes brimming with tears. Maybe I should never have. Oh, God, I feel so. She breaks down sobbing. What? Says Roger. I'm such a fool, Elaine sobs. I mean, I know there's no knight. I really know that. It's silly. There's no knight and there's no horse. There's no horse? Says Roger. You think I'm a fool, don't you? Elaine says. No, says Roger, glad to finally know the correct answer. It's that I need some time, Elaine says. There's a 15-second pause while Roger, thinking as fast as he can, tries to come up with a safe response. Finally, he comes up with one that he thinks might work. Yes, he says. Elaine, deeply moved, touches his hand. Oh, Roger, do you really feel that way? She says. What way? Says Roger. That way about time, says Elaine. Oh, says Roger. Yes. Elaine turns to face him and gazes deeply into his eyes, causing him to become very nervous about what she might say next, especially if it involves a horse. At last she speaks. Thank you, Roger, she says. Thank you, says Roger. Then he takes her home, and she lies in her bed, a conflicted, tortured soul, and weeps until dawn, whereas when Roger gets back to his place, he opens a bag of Doritos, turns on the TV, and immediately becomes involved in a rerun of a tennis match between two Czechoslovakians he'd never heard of. A tiny voice in the far recesses of his mind tells him that something major was going on there in the car. but he's pretty sure there's no way he would ever understand what it was, and so he figures he better not even just think about it. This is also Roger's policy regarding world hunger. The next day, Elaine will call her closest friends, or perhaps two of them, and they will talk about this situation for 6 straight hours in painstaking detail. They will analyze everything that she said and everything that he said, going over it time and time again, exploring every word, expression, and gesture for nuances of meaning, considering every possible ramification. They will continue to discuss the subject off and on for weeks, maybe months, never reaching any definite conclusions, but never getting bored with it either. Meanwhile, Roger, while playing racquetball one day with a mutual friend of his and Elaine's, will pause just before serving, frown, and say, "Norm, did Elaine ever own a horse?" Although the article's funny, it's also very true. We have to understand how each person processes information to understand what is happening. Men should remember that just because she's talking incessantly about something does not necessarily mean it requires an action. Just listen. Women have to realize that men typically want to be the knight in shining armor for her. So he wants to try to fix things. He's trying to serve her. So we understand that about each other. It can really be beneficial. When my wife does this to me, I make it sound like it's some evil thing she's doing to me. When she's talking, sometimes I have to wonder if she's asking for advice or not. So I'll often say, "Is this something you want some help with?" And she'll say, "No, I just want you to listen." So sometimes I have to ask that to clarify that, because I'm not smart enough to know. Most men aren't.
That's right.
We want to fix it. We want to serve them. We want to solve all their problems for them, because that would mean they wouldn't have to talk as much, because they wouldn't have that many problems, because we'd solve them all for them. That's not what they're asking us to do. They're just asking us to listen, usually. So if we'll just ask that question, "Would you like me to fix this for you? Would you like some help understanding how to fix this?" Because we're going to process information as men very logically and sequentially. One thing is not necessarily related to another thing. Very individual compartments for us. For women, if you were to look inside their head, you would see wires running everywhere, and every wire is attached to everything. So she's going to tell you about something someone said 2 weeks ago and have it related to an action that happened yesterday. Or somebody who wore the same outfit did it to her again today. So there must be some kind of diabolical plan involved. Everything is related to everything. And there's just wires crisscrossing everywhere. It's not going to be logical. It's not going to be sequential. It's going to be very emotional. And everything's going to be tied together. That's just how they're wired. We're wired very simply. We can't process all the information they process. We process as men things very logically, very sequentially, and nothing's related to anything. So we miss a lot of the details. But when we come together, I provide her security, she provides me significance, we communicate together, bring God into the picture, we have oneness. So she's very different from him in understanding and processing information. Together, we have the proper, more likely the proper way to process information when we come together as one.
So let's tie it all back to kind of the purpose of good communication. What are we trying to achieve?
We want to have clarity. And when we're trying to get clarity, we have to listen. And we can't be thinking about what she's going to say next or what I'm going to say next when she's done talking. Sometimes it's just about listening, asking clarifying questions. And when we'll do that and understand that barrier to communication being gender, we can really learn to listen better. We can really learn to love them better, because that's really what it is loving them. And for her, if she'll understand that when I'm trying to fix things, sometimes she just needs to tell me, "This is not about the nail on the head video. I just need you to listen right now." "Oh, okay. I can do that. I just need to be told that that's what you want." So if we'll just communicate our desires, communicate our intent, it's really helpful. And our relationship can remove a lot of the friction from it. But we don't do this. We just expect them to know. The expectation is, "Well, you should know what I want you to do." "No, I don't know unless you tell me. I'm a man. I'm very simple. I don't think on that level that you do. I need you to tell me what you need." And at the same time, she has to tell me, "Dave, use your words, because I won't express myself in words. How was your day?" "Good. you know, and that's about all you're going to get out of me. I have to remember she's genuinely interested. And if I'm not sharing that with her, the insecurity that that provides, if I'm providing her security, and that's my job, the insecurity that's causing her, for her to feel like I don't want to express myself to her, I don't trust her, possibly, I don't want to share with her, I'm not loving her. So I have to learn to use my words a little bit more. And maybe it won't be as long and drawn out of a description, but I generally, what I need to do is be genuine about describing the answer to the question that she's asking. And that's how we're going to get this clarity. Now remember, this is just one barrier to communication, being gender. And this is a hard one. It's really hard because we think so differently and our needs are so different. But if I'm going to provide her security, I've got to communicate. I've got to use words. And if she is going to communicate with me, I've got to remember I don't need to fix everything, but she's got to understand I want to do that so I have significance from her. If I fix things for her, I'm just trying to get significance is all I'm trying to do. So if we'll keep that in mind with each other and just communicate what our intent is for one another when we're communicating like that, if it's just for me to listen or if I want some advice or whatever it is, it can really help take a lot of the friction out of the relationship. So that's gender. There's also position. If you're a leader, if you're a boss, if you have a lot of referent power, that can cause a barrier to communication as well. You have to remember that. What can I do to help the other person communicate more freely with me? Or if I'm going to communicate with my boss, understanding that I'm going to be a little reluctant to share truth, possibly. Maybe I write it down beforehand and clarify my thoughts through writing. And now I have this list where I can go in and have an agenda to talk to them about. So I don't back down from something I need to say. It could help give me a little courage. Age, if we're talking somebody with more experience or age than us, again, it could be potentially difficult for me to communicate with them because they know more than me. I don't want to look stupid in their eyes. I want my significance from them. So I have to think about how am I going to communicate this to knock down that barrier for myself, or as the leader, the person with more experience, how can I knock that barrier down so people feel comfortable communicating with me? So no matter what the barrier, we just have to think about how we're going to get rid of it as best we can to help the people around us to communicate with us more clearly, how we're going to help them, how we're going to serve them in that regard. We have to communicate in almost everything we do. When we find that our system's thinking, remember the system 1, 2, and 3, when it's all working and we have internal clarity of mind, body, and spirit, that's really helpful. From there, we can start to focus on the receiver of our message and communicate the message in a manner in which will produce the desired response. Maybe it's an action, maybe it's saying the right thing, whatever it may be. This means that sometimes we have to say things differently than we would like to in order to avoid the receiver from misinterpreting the message. We sometimes like to make ourselves sound smart, so we say things in a manner that we think will accomplish that. That does not serve the other person. It only serves me. If I'm really trying to serve them, I've got to say it in a manner that they're going to get it. In order to have clarity if you're there, you have to communicate it with the team. If your spouse doesn't know you're there, it's hard for them to support it. Clarity comes through communication. When we communicate poorly or don't listen, we're not going to have clarity. When clarity is absent, you're always going to find some degree of consequence. We're going to end up going to different theirs. We're going to end up not supporting each other the way we could. We're not going to have the kind of harmony and synergy that we could have had. The ability to communicate and be understood is God-given. So God has given us the ability to communicate well and be understood. Miscommunicating and not being understood is a result of our fallen condition. And that's because our fallen condition is all about the flesh. It's all about me. We're going to focus on that. And when we focus on ourselves, we're not going to communicate well. But if we'll walk in the Spirit and focus on others and love others, we can communicate better. Repetition in communication is absolutely necessary, as it takes 7 to 11 times to finally hear something before we finally get it. The communication model is made up of the sender, the receiver, medium, and barriers to communication. The sender has to have all that clarity within himself to communicate with clarity externally. He must consider the medium that he's going to transmit through. How am I going to be the most effective communicating this point to other people through that medium. Which medium am I going to use? And then understand the barriers that are present and try to knock them down. When we do that, and then when the receiver has to listen, listening again has to take humility. We've got to lay ourselves aside. When we have humility, external focus, and curiosity, it equals listening or love. Once the receiver thinks he understands the message, he's going to provide feedback by becoming the sender. So now the model just reverses itself and we start over again. It's this constant feedback loop between the sender and the receiver. If you want to be an effective leader, you have to be an effective communicator. If you can't communicate with clarity on where we're trying to go, you're never going to get there together. When there's lack of clarity, there's going to be consequences. Think about what you're going to say. Take all of those factors into consideration and do the best you can with what you have to communicate as clearly as possible. Thanks for listening.
If you would like to offer feedback to any of the Servant Leadership podcasts, please go to our Facebook page and click on the comment section. You can also check us out online at trueservantleadership.com. Our site will soon have videos for the tools that we recommend using, and we will be adding additional content to the website in the future, including links for these podcasts. All of our material comes from the book Servant Leadership, Influencing Others to Get There by Leading a Transformational Life. If you're interested in the book, you can find it at Amazon.com. Both the paperback and the electronic version are available for order. The electronic version is only $1.99, and all of the proceeds from the book go to charity. Thanks for listening, influencing others to get there, serving others, and most of all, thanks for leading with the example of a transformational life set by our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.